So today is the Day of Atonement. It's an exciting day. In Hebrew, the Day of Atonement is actually Yom Kippur. Yom means day in Hebrew, and Kippur comes from a root that means to atone. Yom Kippur is obviously expressed in English as the Day of Atonement. So if you ask around, typically, most people believe this is a Jewish holiday, including my neighbors who are Jewish. They were quite surprised to find out that we keep it. You'd be hard-pressed to find too many Mormons or Protestants or Catholics that are keeping Yom Kippur, or the Day of Atonement, because they all believe that it's a Jewish holiday, exclusively Jewish. However, Yom Kippur is not exclusively a Jewish holiday. Although it is still kept by the Jews. Leviticus 23:1 clearly says that these are my appointed festivals. The Lord said to Moses, "Speak to the Israelites and say to them, these are my appointed festivals, the appointed festivals of the Lord, which you are to proclaim as sacred assemblies." So nowhere is it written that Yom Kippur is exclusively a Jewish holiday, or even just for the nation of Israel. These are God's feasts, and that's why we're here today to observe it. Christ and his disciples also observed Yom Kippur, as we do. You know, Yom Kippur was the only day of the year, and the only holy day, where the high priest, the first being Aaron, brother of Moses, where the high priest was allowed to go into the holiest of holies behind the veil to sprinkle blood upon the mercy seat, or basically the lid of the Ark of the Covenant. There's a lot more that could be said there, but we'll brush over. This day has so much meaning, and God gives so many detailed instructions to Moses on how Aaron is supposed to conduct this ritual. He was to bathe, he was to put on certain white linen. He had a breastplate of 12 precious stones. All these things he had to observe on pain of death if it wasn't done properly. And you know, everything that Aaron did, as well as the successive high priests in the future, everything they did was a physical symbol of greater things to come. Aaron was the intercessor atoning for the sins of the people of Israel through the blood sacrifice of animals, just as Christ is our high priest now, making intercessions for us daily to go to the Father, as Dr. Ross mentioned in his email last night. Basically, Christ fulfilled the role both of the high priest and the blood sacrifice. So in the ancient ritual, he would have been symbolized in both the first goat, which was for Adonai, or the Lord. And also he does the work that Aaron was doing as high priest. He does that for us now, every day. So Aaron, the high priest, was to bring two goats as a sin offering. But before Aaron could enter, he had to wash, put on the linen clothing, the breastplate of 12 stones, very specific. Aaron cast lots for the two goats. One for Adonai, or the Lord, and one for Azazel. Translated the scapegoat. The scapegoat is not the best translation. It's better translated goat of departure. If you'll turn to Leviticus 16, we'll be in Leviticus and Ezekiel mostly today. Since we're at church, I figure we could bring our Bibles. And once in a while, on sermonettes, I don't usually turn to scriptures, have people turn, because there's less time on a split. Sometimes I like to open it up. Leviticus 16, 15 reads, "Next, he," meaning Aaron, "is to slaughter the goat of the sin offering, which is for the people, bring its blood inside the curtain, and do with its blood as he did with the bull's blood, sprinkling it on the ark cover, or the mercy seat, and in front of the ark cover, or the mercy seat. He will make atonement for the holy place because of the uncleanliness of the people of Israel and because of their transgressions, all their sins, and he is to do the same for the tent of meeting, which is there with them right in the middle of their uncleanliness. No one is to be present in the tent of meeting from the time he enters the holy place to make atonement until the time he comes out, having made atonement for himself, for his household, and for the entire community of Israel. Then he is to go out to the altar that is before Adonai and make atonement for it. He is to take some of the bull's blood and some of the goat's blood and put it on all the horns of the altar. He is to sprinkle some of the blood on it with his finger 7 times, thus purifying it and setting it apart from the uncleanliness of the people of Israel. Then you've got the second goat. And the second goat whose lot fell to Azazel, the scapegoat, or goat of departure. And as we understand it, this goat represents Satan. So he enters, this is his significance for the Day of Atonement. Leviticus 16:20 reads, "When he has finished atoning for the holy place, the tent of meeting, and the altar, he is to present the live goat. Aaron is to lay both his hands on the head of the live goat and confess over it all the transgressions, crimes, and sins of the people of Israel. He is to put them on the head of the goat and then send it away into the desert with the man appointed for the purpose. The goat will bear all the transgressions away to some isolated place, and he is to let the goat go in the desert." So this goat had the sins of Israel confessed over it and then is released into the wilderness. This is symbolic of Satan being banished from humanity at a future date, a future prophecy fulfilled, which I assume Mr. Schallenberger will discuss in the second message, the main message. Satan plays a major negative role in the Day of Atonement, and he has played a major role in the lives of man for the last 6,000 years. But this was not always so. There was a time before Satan's fall when he was in perfect harmony with God the Father and Christ. We can read this in Ezekiel. Ezekiel 28, verse 12 through 15. It reads, "You put the seal on perfection. You were full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. You were in Eden, the garden of God, covered with all kinds of precious stones, carnelians, topaz, diamonds, beryl, onyx, jasper, sapphires, green feldspar, emeralds. Your pendants and jewels were made of gold, prepared the day you were created. You were protecting a large region. I placed you on God's holy mountain. You walked back and forth among stones of fire. You were perfect in your ways from the day you were created until unrighteousness was found in you." So this begs the question, what happened? How does a being created and exalted by God go from perfect in your ways to the author of evil, the prince of the power of the air, Satan? What caused Lucifer to go from friend of God to enemy of God? What caused Satan to become the Azazel goat, to be cast out as the author of sin? I would make the argument that Satan has, or Lucifer, has fallen as far from grace as anyone in history. So how did this happen? Well, let's look to Scripture again. Ezekiel 28, verse 17. Ezekiel 28, verse 17. This is speaking of Satan. "Your heart grew proud because of your beauty." So it's obvious from the text that Satan's sin was pride, right? He was beautiful, wise, and so powerful as an angel that he began to covet God's position and authority. He was irritated at having to serve God and grew angry, prideful, and rebellious. He didn't want to serve, he wanted to be served. Even more than that, he didn't want to worship God, he wanted to be worshipped. And this remains true today. The root that grew in Satan was pride. And pride is something that we as Christians often gloss over as an evil and something that God hates, but we don't equate it with the root or origin of the world's evil. But I think that it may be. Proverbs 6, you all know Proverbs 6:16. You don't have to turn there. Seven things that God hates. The first listed is a proud look. So let's spend a little time today examining Satan's prideful fall and the lessons for us on this Day of Atonement, or Yom Kippur. In Isaiah 14:12, first, how did Lucifer fall from grace to become Satan? Well, we have a record of it here. It reads, How you are fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning. How you are cut down to the ground, you who weaken the nations. For you have said in your heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will also sit on the mount of the congregation on the farthest sides of the north, and I will ascend above the height of the clouds. I will be the most high. Yet you shall be brought down to Sheol, to the lowest depths of the pit. You notice he says I five times. Just as a side note, if you look around in society today, how much more narcissistic is society today than it was 20 years ago? And I have nothing particularly against social media. Social media can be used for good or for evil, but it can also be misused and abused. And I do think that's what's happening predominantly now. I can't say too much because my wife works in tech. So you may say, or you may think, what commandment is there against pride? Well, actually, it's like the summation of the most important commands, to love God and love others as yourself. We can do a simple checklist. The first four commandments are about loving God. The last six are about loving others. Pride is about loving yourself more than others and more than God. Pride tells you that your life, your opinions, your desires and your needs are more valuable and more important than others. And pride can tell you that your ways are higher than God's ways. Or I could say pride can tell me that my ways are higher than God's ways. This is what happened to Satan. He got to the point where he wanted to be number one, top dog. He wanted to run the whole show. It's the pinnacle of arrogance. And see, Satan knows that if he can get us to focus too much on ourselves, we will neglect God and neglect others. Secondly, the lies Satan tells us in the world are seeds of pride. If you haven't guessed yet, my title has something to do with pride. I had three titles today, actually. We can take a vote. My wife couldn't pick one. Satan, the author of pride, is one. Pride, Lucifer's legacy, is the second one. And the greatest fall is the third. And who am I kidding? I never make titles. Bob McCurdy makes all my titles. So we should just let Bob pick. But it's one of those three. Now that I've lost my place, I'll go back. Secondly, the lies Satan tells us in the world are seeds of pride. How Satan tempted Christ. Not only man, but he attempted to tempt Christ. All to drive a wedge between God and Christ, a wedge built on pride. Let's look at Matthew 4. Matthew 4 and verse 1. You're all familiar with this scripture. You've heard it 100 times. Then Jesus was led up by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. And when he had fasted 40 days and 40 nights, afterward he was hungry, much like we are today, but probably much more so. Now when the tempter came to him, he said, "If you are the Son of God, command that these stones become bread." But he answered and said, "It is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God." Then the devil took him up into the holy city, set him on the pinnacle of the temple. And he said to him, "If you're the Son of God, throw yourself down, for it is written, he shall give his angels charge over you, and in their hands they shall bear you up, lest you dash your foot against a stone." This was pride to tempt and test God to disobey him. Satan was basically saying, "I can give you this earthly kingdom now. There's no need to wait. You can be in charge now." And Christ didn't even deny that Satan was and is still the God of this world. And when I say God, I mean God with a little g. Picking it up in verse 8, again the devil took him up to an exceedingly high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their glory. And he said to him, "All these things I will give you if you will fall down and worship me." Then Jesus said to him, "Away with you, Satan, for it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God, and him only you shall serve." Again, Christ didn't deny. He denied Satan, but he did not deny his rule on this earthly kingdom. Pride to become higher than God. That was Satan's first sin. But it's also the sin, it's the greatest lie that Satan tells humanity. He still tells humanity to this day. Let me back up. Let's go through the just mentioned Adam and Eve. They were the first. But today he still tells world leaders, a lot of leaders of the tech companies, there's people out there that are so powerful they're actually trying to play God. I'm a fan of some of the work that Elon Musk does. He started a lot of great companies, but I think that his ambition, not that it's necessarily wrong to go to outer space, but the attention and the accolades that he gets for his attempt to go to Mars and set up another colony, it's not going to happen. If we can't lower the temperature on Earth, we're not going to lower the temperature on Mars. And one of his ideas to lower the temperature was to set off a couple of nuclear bombs up there. But my point is that if you're in California, Silicon Valley, people look to him and others almost as gods. And they sort of replace, if they get rid of God, they can replace him as gods on this earth. And that's, Satan wants to be worshipped, and I think he's working through some of these individuals to achieve that goal, to be worshipped. So this is the greatest lie that Satan tells, that if only you disobey him, do the exact opposite, you can rise to be like him, that our God is a selfish God. Of course, that is not a description of God, that's a description of Satan. He wants to seek and destroy. He wants to take and destroy lives. In this society, if you have enough fame or money or musical or athletic talent, you know, look at the sports stars, look at the musical stars, even politicians sometimes, they're literally worshipped by human beings. You'll see that at concerts, you know, girls crying hysterically to get within 50 feet of someone. So how about Adam and Eve saying they could become like God if they only disobeyed him? Did they say that? Did they think that? Well, Genesis 3:4 reads, "You will not certainly die," the serpent said to the woman, "for God knows that when you eat from it, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like God." So they may not have said it, but Satan told them, and evidently they believed it. "For God knows that when you eat from it, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like God." So they were the first humans to fall for that. And we can see this in the things Satan celebrates in the world. Things that distance us from God. Coveting, lies, illicit sex, self-worship, self-gratification, self-promotion, exalting ourselves, our opinions, our worth above others. There's certainly plenty of evidence of this in how people, you know, are interacting face-to-face at times. But if you really want to see pride and self-interest at its worth, you can look no further than just social media. Again, nothing against it necessarily. It can be used for good. But it seems like these days it's being used for things that are less than righteous. Facebook, Instagram. And some of that even infighting in the church as well. And out of all the social media platforms, I think Twitter is probably the worst in terms of it's the most ruthless. It's got the least amount of personal accountability and the most amount of venom. You don't have to really expose who you are there. But Facebook can run a close second. Do we have any Instagram stars in the audience? Robbie? Is he? He's not here today. Okay. So just look around our world today. People are pridefully and shamefully against God. And they're worse off for it, even in this life. Again, never before have we had more social media, more focus on self-esteem, self-love, self-worth, self-promotion. Yet today we have the highest rates of depression, suicide, and self-medication in history. And this is especially true of young children. It's on the rise. These kids and these people, I believe, Satan's lie, joined in his prideful way and are suffering with a lot of mental and emotional health as a result of it. And it's hard not to just think of the LGBTQ movement. They even call it pride, pride parades. I've unfortunately had the experience of landing in, you know, certain towns, staying downtown unknowingly, like Chicago or New York or San Francisco, just when the Pride Parade starts. You know, you go out to your hotel and there it is. It's when you wish you'd stay in the suburbs. But the rainbow, sign of God's promise, that's almost as if to spit in the face of God's commandments. And who's engineering all of these signs, symbols, and movements? I don't think it's humanly possible to organize so much anti-God evil across the city, state lines, nation, and across a global scale without supernatural help. I mean, these movements are organized. And Satan, I think, the prince of the power of the air, is transmitting his signal loud and clear. And that's who's organizing this stuff. And how exciting it will be when he's banished. Mr. Schallenberger will probably talk some about that as well. You know, if, or should I say when, as we all do at some time in our lives, when we have pride, we too will suffer. We will be distanced from God and potentially distanced from our mate or our brother or father or mother, whatever relationship it is that we're letting pride get in the middle of. And potentially we risk losing our crown, our opportunity to live life eternal as sons and daughters of God. So I know it seems crazy, right? But if pride can make Lucifer, the light bearer, the one God says was perfect in all of his ways, fall away, then doesn't pride have the ability to take me down as well? Am I not naive to think that pride could occupy too much space in my heart and my mind and my ego and take me down as well? I think it would be naive. I think it could take any of us down in theory if we aren't aware of it and aware of how it gets started, where it creeps up, and how it gains traction in our hearts and minds. And I know it's easy to think, most of us in this room are probably thinking, you're not trying to usurp God's authority. We aren't trying to be famous or mega rich or fake Instagram stars. Okay, except for Robbie. He takes a lot of pictures, Robbie does. So how can we be prideful? Well, on a personal level, pride finds its way into our relationships. All types of relationships, starting with parental. A son can set his heart in pride against his father, perhaps seeking independence prematurely at too young of an age. I, for one, was definitely guilty of that. Probably started around age 14 or 15. Or maybe even holding on to an offense as an adult. Maybe you had a rough childhood, and there was a lot of tension there. A father may let pride infect his relationship with his son. There's warnings in the Bible against both. How about marriage? Does anyone have pride in their marriage? I know I don't. Right, Bridget? Last week, we've been moving our offices around, playing musical offices since COVID, and Bridget decided to take my office months ago, so I gave it to her. And I took the guest room in the basement as my office. And then last week, she decided to move upstairs. We got her a nice, those desks that sort of, the electronic desks that rise and lower. So you can stand up, standing desk, sitting desk. I came home one day, and she moved all my stuff out of the guest bedroom back into my office. And I had an important design presentation, and I went in there and said, Bridget, my designs are missing. You moved all my stuff. Where's my designs? Because these designs take me, one design can take me, you know, 12 or 15 hours. And I just have that original copy. So if I lose the original copy, that's 12 or 15 hours of my week gone. She said, I didn't move your designs. I just moved your other stuff. And I was like, that's impossible. She was probably in one of her cleaning modes, and she goes into her frenzy, and I mean, they were talking about the woman that literally threw my birth certificate in the trash can one time. It was 7 or 8 years ago, but it was an accident. It was on the floor. It was sort of crumpled up. So anyway, the next day I'm in my truck, you know, in one of my trucks, and I found it behind the bench seat. So I found my design. Didn't mention it to her, of course. She asked me the next day, did you find your designs, honey? And I was like, yeah. Yeah, I did. I did. Where were they? They were in my truck. Yeah. So not only did I have to suffer the shame of being that forgetful, I thought my memory was better than that. She then went on to say, well, I think maybe you owe me an apology. So it's adding insult to injury. So now I've got to, you know, they say swallow your pride and apologize. It's at the lowest point of my day, you know. So I had to apologize, rightfully so. But that's how marriage works, right? So you can always have pride creep into a marriage. And if the man doesn't apologize and he's adamant and he does that 100 times or 1,000 times, then that's when you start having a lot of marital problems, you know. So pride can definitely play a negative role in your marriage. So here's another element, another big one for the church. Pride can be deadly, very deadly, when you use it to harness small or large groups of people, let's say, to follow your cause. I grew up in Worldwide Church of God. In 95, I joined United Church of God due to there was a change in, let's say, what the Worldwide Church of God was teaching in terms of doctrine. They stopped teaching that the Sabbath was valid in the holy days, and my family wanted to continue in the Sabbath and holy days, so United was formed. We might have some new people here that aren't aware of the history there. But since 1995, it's estimated that there's over 300 church splits that have occurred that have broke off from Worldwide Church of God or United or others. In fact, I don't think you could even track it. I mean, it would probably be impossible. So I would ask the question, do you think that every single one of the church splits was justified by one or both parties? Were they all the will of God? Did everyone involved act with humility? And I don't mean to step on anyone's toes. I know we all come from all the different groups. I've got family, I've got friends, and lots of different groups out there. But I would venture to say that some of these splits, or perhaps many of them, had one man or a group of men or a group of people that pride Pride is a primary cause of destroyed relationships, personal and collective failure, and a root of evil. And by destroyed relationships, I would say relationships with your creator, with your spouse, with your brother, with your brethren, maybe your boss, your employees, all the above. So this explanation may seem overly simple, but pride comes so naturally. It does to me. I don't know about you. It comes naturally to have our own way, to focus on our own needs, our own wants, our own desires. I mean, I've been thinking about food all day, stuffing my mouth. It never crossed my mind to, man, I wonder if Jerry's hungry. I really want to just bring Jerry a hamburger, you know? I didn't cross my mind. I've been more concerned with how weak and hungry I was this morning. And I thought, I'm gonna blow this split sermon, you know? Get up there, am I going to get the brain fog? But anyway, in conclusion, I can't go over time this time. I got publicly shamed like a month ago. So we're at 31 minutes, Jerry. I'm under the limit. In conclusion, despite being given the full understanding of the promise of God to reign and rule with God the Father, Christ equally understood where the power came from, the Father, and that without him, he could do nothing. Christ knew the power came from above. This is the example we are left, the complete contrast of Satan, who, understanding God's plan, believed himself through his pride to be the source of power. If a perfect being, again, Lucifer, who became Satan, can fall to the lure of pride, then we can too. And maybe it's through selfish ambition, or maybe just through neglect of God, or self-reliance, too much self-reliance. But regardless, let us heed the warning of atonement and be found humble, not prideful, and worthy of our calling.